Welcome to Michigan HockeyCast 2.5, where we look at what Michigan has done in the last month or so and what they're going to do, and you'll never guess who's sitting next to me. So with Anthony still in Vegas at his residency internship, we're not completely sure, but he's let us know he's all right, which is good. Adam Peppermint Schnepp, he's dealing with some stuff over on the other side of the state. So I brought in what appears to be, as Sam says, the venerable one. I believe you've been referred to as.
Yeah,
this is Mr. Craig Ross.
Yeah, Brian is mortified that I'm here. You know, he doesn't know I'm here, I don't think, and if he listens to this podcast, he'll be mortified that I'm talking about hockey at all. But I will say a couple things. One is, I may be the only person, I'm sure I am, connected to MGO Blog, who actually saw a hockey game at the Coliseum.
Okay.
Because back in the 1960s, when I was a student, I would go over to the Coliseum, which I think sat around 1,200 to 1,500 at most.
If that.
And Michigan at the time was dreadful. But I still went. And so I do have season hockey tickets, so I have seen a lot of games. And I've seen at least two or three games with Anthony, who does actually know about hockey, so
yeah.
I'm hoping some of that rubs off. So, but beyond that, Brian, blame Dave, not me. He dragged me into this.
Well, so we should get into this. We have a few series to cover first. The last time that we had a hockey cast, we talked about the upcoming OSU series and how big it was going to be, and then so we'll talk about that. And then the next couple series, and then we'll get into where they are now, which is actually a pretty good place, especially if you were paying attention a few months ago, you were probably not predicting that we were going to have this kind of a podcast in the middle of February.
Actually, I talked to Jack Weidenbach just before we came on, and I bumped into him, and I asked him what his thoughts were on hockey, because I know he has season tickets and goes when he can. And he said, I thought this team was dead. And I'm always optimistic. I always think we're going to win. I thought this team was dead. And I said, yeah, in December I was the same place. But, you know, Mel apparently has been upbeat and was thinking the team was pretty good. They just had been a little unlucky and they
Well, that is true. That is something that
some
we've
injuries.
Both talked about. We'll get into a little bit later. But part of their resurgence started in the Ohio State series where we were talking – in prep a little bit about it, but we thought that the first game that they played, it was a 3-2 final, but Michigan kind of outplayed them for the most part, and they got some even strength goals. I believe Mike Pastajov had one, and then they had a Cam York goal, a pretty nice goal, and then Will Lockwood had a winner late in the game.
Yeah, that was, I mean, from my point of view, a very convincing Michigan win, even though it was a 3-2 score. Both of Ohio State's goals were power plays.
Right.
And Michigan, I think, outshot them 42-27, and they weren't a garbage 42 shots either.
No.
This was a game where Michigan won and deserved to win.
And Ohio State's a tough matchup for Michigan because they're very defensively sound. They usually get pretty good goaltending. And so it just kind of elongates games in terms of who's going to make mistakes. And Michigan played them tough in Columbus, but in the end of those games, made mistakes, coughed up a couple leads, and ended up giving away all 6 points. That did not happen on Friday.
Right. And the game had some – it was reminiscent to some extent of the games in Columbus.
Yeah.
I thought – although the ones in Columbus were pretty even, I felt. I felt the one here in Ann Arbor, game one, was – pretty much dominated by Michigan, and I was thinking, here we go again, as it's been often this year. We've outplayed the other team, and, you know, who knows what's going to happen.
Then the back half of the game,
right.
Give it away, but they didn't. Yeah. Lockwood actually, who hadn't scored in quite a while, finished the game strong, getting a goal with a few minutes to go. Yost was crazy. That led into Saturday, which was probably, in my mind, it was one of the most hyped games I've been to, at least this year and in last year too, because they had a chance to really go shooting up the standings. Got off to a rough start, had sort of an unlucky goal from the blue line where a defenseman just sort of threw it at the net and then gave up a power play goal pretty soon after that, all of a sudden it's 2-0, and you're like, ugh, like, this was a series that they really needed. But they did fight back.
Yeah, I mean, the second period was quite remarkable in that we had 2 major penalties, and
yes,
and we skated down.
Both ejections, I think.
Right, both ejections. One of them was Beecher, I think. Mm-hmm.
And Van Wy. So it was probably 2 of their better centers.
Right, and so it really made it difficult for Michigan. I didn't check this, but I think Michigan skated shorthanded in that period 12 to 14 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, there were some other penalties. And the one on Beecher was a particularly crazy one because a state player had a Michigan player pinned to the...
Lockwood.
Yeah, across his neck.
Yeah, bent over the boards.
Over the boards. He had his cross-checking him across his neck. Beecher came in to try and stop
defend him, which you would do because your buddy's getting decapitated.
And he ends up with a major and getting ejected. And so that one was particularly galling. But the bizarre and incredibly good thing about it was we won the period 1-0.
Yep. They killed both those majors.
They killed the majors. They came back. They got a goal. It's 2-1. And then early in the third period, we give up a bad goal, I think on a Summers mistake.
Yeah, he kind of fumbled the puck at the blue line. It led to an odd man rush, which I didn't mention this earlier, but they gave up 5 odd man rushes in the first period, which just those 5, I think, probably matched what they'd given up in the previous multiple weeks. And so they end up giving up 7 in the game. Get 2 of the 3 main goals were from the odd man rushes. Ohio State gets an empty net tally to make it 4-1. But it was just kind of a deflating loss. It was positive from a sense that they fought back and killed those penalties and stayed in it. But given the hole that they were in, how they played the previous night, you just really hope that they could get a sweep or at least get it to overtime to get something. They couldn't, and then the next weekend, they welcomed in Wisconsin.
Right. I mean, the bad part about the second Ohio State game was Michigan hadn't lost in January.
Yeah.
I mean, they won all their games in January.
Yep.
And so there was this glimmer of hope. And then after the loss, which I think was the first game in February, Ohio State game, you're thinking, okay, you know, we're probably going nowhere. We got to win the next 4.
Now we have to win
a lot of games
in a row.
We
got
to win, the next 4 at least to have any chance. But you know, Wisconsin comes in a team that really has some talent and good skaters.
They have 3 first round picks, and I think 1 or 2 guys that are probably going to be first round picks. So talent everywhere, except maybe in the one position that Michigan has maybe the best player on the ice, and that's in goalie. And I think that, you know, we'll talk about each of these games, but the theme for the whole weekend was Straussman was good. He wasn't maybe elite, would you say, because still some pucks went in the net. But Lebedev was in goal for Wisconsin, and I don't know how many goals he gave up that I just scratched my head at. Probably 5 or 6.
Yeah, Lebedev on Friday night was dreadful. And so they
got chased, right?
Yeah, they pulled him. They brought Blomqvist in. He wasn't much better. Michigan scored 8 goals. And that's a lot these days. This isn't like,
it is. It's a little misleading because I thought a couple of those goals were gifts and a couple.
Well,
like,
that's the point. Goaltending is terrible.
that is the point. Becker had like a tip in that was kind of okay. You know, is that really going to count? But yeah, Michigan kind of gets out early, gets a goal in the first period. Wisconsin ties it, but then Michigan comes back. And Granowitz, the guy that you really like, ends up getting a hat trick. And they get the first line going a little bit. I'm sorry, not the first. Well, yeah, Hayhurst had probably this was sort of the beginning of the resurgence of Jacob Hayhurst, who we'd been talking about all year. And he had a really nice snipe from below the dot, which was going to lead to what he did later in the weekend. But Michigan's offense just really kind of came to life. They got goals from Lambert. They got goals from Nick Pastiov, Jack Becker, like we said earlier. And then Granowitz just parks himself in front of the net and kind of cleans up a lot of stuff that just gets thrown there. And at the time, I think he was like tied for 3rd on the team after getting 3 goals in that game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know when he started getting a regular shift.
It was probably December.
December.
I think they skated him once maybe before, but then once or twice maybe before, but it was approaching about halfway through the season.
Well, you get a walk-on who's got 6 goals in basically 2 months. That's pretty good.
And they're kind of all mostly similar goals, like getting to the front of the net, being a disruptor of the goalie, getting your stick on the ice and just deflecting stuff in or getting like rebounds and stuff, and that's how he got a couple of them. He had a nice 2-on-1 in this game where he finished kind of with a nice move too, but he's kind of a neat piece to put on another line where they can kind of get garbage to the net, and he's able to finish a lot of that.
Yeah, I agree. And So, Friday night was two pretty good offensive teams, it looked like, but a lot.
Yeah.
But in the end, the difference in the game was Straussman versus Lebedev and Blomqvist, who were terrible.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, no, you're right about that. And then going into Saturday, this was such a weird game because, like, speaking of Wisconsin's goaltending, Michigan gets a first goal about 6 minutes into the game, and Keaton Pearson just rips a shot from the point, and it gets sort of lost in Lebedev's chest, and Pearson then like rushes the net and kind of pokes one, hits it again, and it kind of goes through him, and he gave up a goal later from Summers that was, again, it was a shot from the point that he could see that's just slid under his pad, and this was like the Lambert goal from the previous night where he kind of ducked his glove under the shot. And you're just like, I mean, it's nice that these are going in, don't get me wrong, but none of these in theory like should be goals. Like he's just kind of fumbling the puck around.
Yeah, this game was similar to game 1 with Wisconsin in that both teams generated some offense.
Yeah.
But man played well, and Lebedev was not good. And this time they didn't go to Blomqvist because the prior night he even looked more hopeless than Lebedev.
And I believe, wasn't the guy behind you yelling for Jack Barry at some point?
Yeah, yes. And I didn't know who he was talking about, but he was yelling. In fact, he started on Friday night yelling for Barry.
For Barry.
And yelled for Barry for six straight periods.
Maybe he had a point.
I don't know. Maybe it was a good thing that the Wisconsin didn't pay any attention to.
The other thing in this game, before we get to the end of it, is Hayhurst. This was the Hayhurst goal, and we'll talk about him in the Michigan State Series because he was good there too, but he took a puck down the boards and beat a guy down the boards, went around a defender as he came off the boards, and then juked the goalie, I believe is Lebedev at the time, and had an open net. And that was kind of, I remember watching that and tweeting something out. It was like, that goal for him has been coming for a long time, because if you look at the way he's been playing, he moves the puck really well. He controls it very well, like in small spaces. Now, it reminds me a little bit, I don't know if you remember, but Alex Kyle of a few years ago, where he could just seemingly stick handle in a phone booth. And they've kind of put him on the line. This is where this line really jumped out to me, but they've put him on a line with Beecher and Lockwood, and all three of those guys are really starting to click. And what you're seeing for Michigan is they're kind of getting like an elite top line again, which is something that they had when they made their previous tournament runs. And the years that they didn't really have a top line. Now this line is starting to carry them.
Yeah, this line has been very good. I know that you and Anthony and Brian Cook all talked up Hayhurst right from the get-go,
yeah,
and thought he would be. And Anthony was very, very high on Beecher.
Well, yeah, he's a first-round pick.
But he was a first-round pick,
sure.
So that one wasn't a secret. But in any event, this line has come together, and it looks like, I don't know if I'd call it an elite line at this point, but it sure seems like a pretty good one, and they're scoring some goals.
Well, when if you just take the second half of the season, I would say that it's definitely getting there. And the other thing that when you have a line that does that, it can put other lines back in places where they can be effective, where you're not asking too much more than necessary from other lines, so they can kind of match up against other teams' lines that make sense for them instead of pushing them up against sort of the other team's number one lines. So the other thing that I thought was interesting, there weren't a ton of penalties all weekend, which, you know, I heard somewhere Michigan is, I think, in the top 10 in taking penalties, or not taking penalties, I should say, which is something that as Michigan fans for years we've always been complaining about, is that they always seem to end up in the box and giving other teams who may maybe not be as talented just extra opportunities with a man advantage. They've really cut down on that this year. I believe this Wisconsin series was one of the sort of the essence of that in terms of like this is how they're playing now, and they're playing cleaner. They're not taking as many dumb penalties, and that's, I think, when you're playing against an elite offensive team the way that Wisconsin has players like that, you cannot give them a man advantage. And their power play is good, and Michigan did not really give it to them much all weekend. They had those couple goals, but they didn't have that many opportunities.
Yeah, I think you could see this coming all year to some extent, but especially in the post GLI, they really haven't done a lot of stupid stuff. You know, I mean,
it's been the one game against Ohio State where they had that 7-0 MRs, lost it. But other than that, that's the only really like not great game they've played.
Right, I agree. And so, I mean, right now it feels like if you're going to beat Michigan, you're going to have to beat them. They're not going to give up a garbage goal, or they're certainly not going to give up many of them.
Not many.
Man's playing. They're not going to give a ton of odd man rushes.
Nope.
And they're not going to put themselves in the penalty box with stupid stuff. So, I mean, right now you can beat Michigan because they're not a team of an elite team. But if you're going to beat them, you're going to have to really beat them. You're going to have to
outplay them.
You're going to have to outplay them.
And there's
them.
Not a lot of teams. Like, we've seen, this is the second time through the Big Ten, and you and I have watched almost every game.
Everybody, yeah.
And there's not a team that it looks like really scares Michigan.
Yeah, they're better. Right.
No, I mean, we'll talk about Notre Dame in the next segment. But the last time we saw them, Michigan was clearly the better team, and that was in South Bend. It will be interesting when they go to Minnesota, because Minnesota's been playing very, very well. Mm-hmm. They were a very young team, and when you get a young team that struggles but starts to pick up momentum and things start to click for them, you know, they're a very different team than the first time you play them. And in Minneapolis, I know Michigan's had more success there the last couple of years than they had in probably the last four decades, probably since they were playing at the Coliseum.
Right.
But that is going to be – that'll be a big series. So we have one left to get to. That's the Michigan State series. So I remember going into this on Friday night. You know, even when Michigan State was at their worst under Anastas and a little bit after, Michigan would still struggle at Munn. They would be winning three or four games in a row, go to Munn, and just drop kind of a silly game in that sense. I was a little nervous about that going in, but right away – Michigan jumped down their throats.
Yeah, Michigan really got off to a jump in this one. Incidentally, I mean, it's hard for me to dislike Danton Cole, which is, you know, one is he seems like kind of a gracious guy. He's very not in the D'Antonio-ism mold.
which we're so used to, right. Like, assuming it just is Michigan State.
Right, and he's not, doesn't seem like that, and I think he's a good coach, and I think that program has really sort of turned it around a bit, so good for them.
Well, when they, you know, his first year, or maybe it was Anastas last year, they were below 50 in pairwise, and there's only 60 teams.
Yeah.
Like, they're down there with the American Internationals and the Niagaras and the Alaska teams. Well, now Michigan is playing tough games against them when they're, like, about 20th or so in pairwise. Mm-hmm. And they've slid down a little bit because Michigan's beat them a couple times, spoiler alert. But, you know, it wasn't the walkover. Like, Friday kind of was, and I think they took them by storm in term and went up there. They got a power play goal early from Slaker, who has been scoring a lot lately. Right. And then they sort of got another one. I call it a reverse because the Slaker goal went around the horn and to the right. This one went back to Martin, and he shot it just inside the post. Brian and I talked about this on Sunday. He thought maybe Lethemon was a little slow getting to the post. That could be. But so right away, Michigan's up 2-0. They go in the second period, and Hayhurst has a similar goal to the one that he had that we talked about at Wisconsin, where he beats a guy at the blue line and gets in on a 2-on-1. The defenseman can't get over, and he goes 5-hole on Lethemon, and all of a sudden it's 3-0.
Yeah, and Lethemon has, you know, going into the weekend, I think was the top-rated goaltender in the Big Ten and one of the two or three top rated in the country on in terms of save percentage.
Yeah, no, he's been having a good year.
0.945 on saves. And so he's played well. Michigan made him look pretty average at best on
it wasn't
I don't know if it was his fault or the defense's fault for Michigan State. I mean, to me, in this game, Michigan State got behind really quick.
Yeah.
And the fans seemed to fall out of it. And Michigan actually had a fairly large cheering section.
The Children
there.
Of Yost brought like an entire section there.
Yeah. And so it almost, I don't say it felt like a home game, but it felt like once Michigan got ahead, the crowd seemed dispirited and Michigan State seemed a little dispirited.
Well, the way State plays is they play the way sort of Michigan had to last year, where they would try to eke out a goal early or at least play good defense to stay in the game. But it's kind of like running the triple option, where if you get down a couple goals, like they don't really have the firepower to get back.
Right.
They have a couple of nice players, but if Michigan can set their defense to match up against the Kotarenko and Lewandowski line, then it's just going to be tough. And that's kind of what you saw that game is, I wrote down that Mann made his first like attempt at a good save like halfway through the game.
Right.
Like they didn't really challenge for the first 30 minutes or so. And by that time, you know, it was almost 4-0.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this was pretty much that. I mean, Michigan came out really hard, real skating fast.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, you mentioned that when we were watching, you said, boy, they look fast tonight.
Yeah. They looked fast right from the get go. And State was back on their heels, if that's an appropriate comment.
Back on their blades, maybe.
Back on their blades. And the crowd was done. And so
yeah. It
never really felt like State was in that game at all.
The one thing I want to point out before we move on to game two is the fifth goal for Michigan is 4-1. And Luke Morgan's kind of had a tough year. Not a lot of scoring. He's really fast. But he made an unbelievable backhanded pass from one side of the crease to the other that Slaker went just under the bar to make it 5-1. And that pass was awesome because not only was it a really nice play to set up a goal, but it was nice for a guy who's been on different lines all year, been kind of up and down the depth chart, and for him to be able to make a play like that in a big game, I was really excited about it.
Yeah, yeah.
So they get the first win, and then they play Saturday night. Oh, wait, nope. They don't play Saturday night.
They play
Monday because people tweeted at me that Disney on Ice had taken over LCA, and so they needed to move the game to Monday, which I don't know if I have ever watched a Michigan hockey game on a Monday before last night.
I can't recall it either.
So,
and this one started, State came out and they said, we know what happened on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to let that happen. And State came out, I thought, very energized and
Yes. Skating
very well in this game. And right from the beginning, I mean, both teams, I thought, were skating hard and fast.
And that, I think, mostly carried through the first two periods, mm-hmm. is that they were right in it. Michigan built their lead, but State never really went away, and you knew they were one slip and fall or a bad bounce away from getting right back in it. Consequently, that never happened. And this was the game, you know, that I thought Lethemon was, again, maybe not at his best. I thought the first goal, Anthony and I were talking about this, but, you know, the shot came from underneath the dot, and he said that's a pretty close-range shot, but it looked like it went through him. You thought it went under his pad. I thought it went under his arm, but either way, it didn't go outside of his frame.
Right, it did.
And he could see the shot. And it was a nice shot from Lockwood. I'm not taking anything away, but it was just kind of emblematic of the series for him that I would feel like in a better weekend for him, he makes that save.
Yeah, you thought it was under his arm. I thought it was five hole. But
either way, it's still in his frame.
Right. And the truth is that the Monday night game was really a game or maybe State had a little bit of an edge in play in this game. The numbers say so. I would think that even with Michigan having two breakaways.
Oh yes,
they had two
that they scored on neither.
That they scored on neither one of them, so I felt this was maybe a man's game, Strauss man's game. I mean, where he played extremely well.
Yes.
And Lethemon played not so extremely well. And again, it came down to Michigan's goaltending winning it. There was one other thing I noticed. I went into the more, I don't know if you'd call them advanced stats in hockey. but Michigan blocked 30, credited Michigan for 30 blocks.
30 blocks?
In the game.
That seems like a lot.
Yeah, and compare it to State, who had 12.
I think that's very reflective of who was taking the shots in the game, mm-hmm. or taking the attempts, I guess.
Maybe that's right. And so that, I think, was a big deal. I thought, you said before, I think you felt Michigan, from a defensive point of view, positionally was very good. And I think the fact that Michigan did have 30 block shots in the game shows that pretty much.
Well, and they needed it because, you said, State came out with energy and was playing hard. Mm-hmm. The thing is that they couldn't really finish a goal. They were in some good opportunities, but nobody could just make that extra play.
Right.
There was one sequence in the middle of the second period when they were on a power play.
The one that bounced off.
Yeah, it hit both posts. I think it hit Mann in the back of the head.
Yeah, that was lucky.
So Michigan's getting a little puck luck that probably they haven't for the first half of the year.
Correct.
But... And the other thing is that Michigan converted both their power play opportunities. Mm-hmm. And one of them was a really nice set from Slaker to Lockwood to Hayhurst, where you went from one side of the ice across the other and then thrown it in front and Hayhurst with a redirect. And there's really, we watched this on replay 3 or 4 times. There's really nothing that any of the defenders can do because it was really cool to see. But Cam York comes down from the point, drops down near the near post, and draws the defender away, and the far defender can't get to Hayhurst in time, and he's there wide open and just tips the puck in. And that's the kind of stuff that's like, I remember tweeting something in late November or late October, and I thought when they looked all right, if their power play can just get going, if they can find guys that can score on the number one power play unit, this could be a pretty decent team because they had good goaltending, their defense was a lot better, and, that... When you don't have a bunch of elite goal scorers, you can counteract that by using an extra man. And they couldn't really for the first few months, but if you look back at the last few weeks, the last few series, they're getting multiple power play goals in a series and sometimes in a game.
Yeah, agreed completely. The other power play goal maybe was a little lucky, although it was a very nice play by, I think it was Lockwood.
Blankenberg. He was a defenseman at the top, where he shot it kind of from dead on, and it looked like there was a double screen. Yeah. But Lockwood might have actually been the guy in front.
I think Lockwood was in front of
him. Yeah.
I think on the game two against MSU, MSU played really well, and credit to them, but Michigan still was able to, I think, almost match their energy and they just seemed like a more solid team. That's the only thing than MSU in the end.
I think you had a little bit better goaltending, a little bit of luck, but some better goaltending, and then you just had better finishing. Yeah. You had Blankenberg saw the half-open net and hit it. You had the really nice power play goal what we just talked about, and then you had a nice tip from Lockwood in the third period that was early on that made it 4-1. And then after that, that was it. They played out the rest of the game. But neither team really did a whole lot, and it looked like we're just kind of waiting for this game to end because we've decided who the better team was in this game. And, as well as MSU played, they still struggle to put the puck in the net at times, and Michigan has turned that around in the last few weeks, and there's not a bigger example than these last couple games.
Yeah, I don't know if we want to talk about it in the next section or not, about... goals scored in the Big Ten and what Michigan has done on the season. Maybe
that sounds perfect for the next section because we're also going to look at the Big Ten standings. Okay. So why don't we take a break and we'll get into that stuff in a couple minutes.
Okay.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Start our second segment looking at Michigan's next opponent, who they've already played once, and that went particularly well in South Bend. They will play the Notre Dame Fighting Irish this weekend. So Peppermint and I have usually you look at about 8 different things that try to tell you just quick snapshots of what a team looks like and what to kind of expect and how they play. So we'll go through all these different stats. The first is pairwise, which tells you just, well, how good you are overall. Notre Dame's 22nd. Michigan's about 20. So they're similar-ish teams or have had similar seasons, which if you've looked at the Big Ten at all, that seems like everyone. In Corsi, Notre Dame drops down to about 37th, and this is more reflective, I think, of their coaching staff than their talent overall, as Jeff Jackson is generally going to be a defensive-minded coach. And so they don't generally have the puck a lot. They don't dominate offensive zones a lot unless the team isn't quite as good. So you can expect Michigan to probably have the puck the majority of the time in this game. When we go to special teams, Notre Dame's converting at about 20%, which is average-ish. Not too bad. And then they defend power plays at 77%, which is not very good. Yeah. I remember when Michigan went to the Frozen Four 2 years ago, their penalty kill was in the mid to high 70s. And every time in the tournament they took a penalty, we're all just like crossing everything we have, holding on as tight as we can, because it was just an adventure. So if Michigan can draw a couple power plays, the way that they've been scoring lately on the power play, especially against Michigan State and even going back to Wisconsin, that could be sort of a game changer. They have 7 drafted skaters, which is a bit of talent. It's not like playing against a team that has, you know, 1 or 2 picks that, you know, kind of is getting all over agers. These are going to be guys that, you know, NHL teams have invested in. But they only have 1 skater scoring over 0.75 points per game, which just tells you that you don't have one guy that's carrying the load. They kind of have a lot of guys that are doing a little bit or maybe enough. And then in net, Cale Morris, it seems like he's been here forever. He had a year a couple years ago where he was up around 95 save percentage, which is absurd. It's dropped down to about 913 this year, which is still all right. Not great, but not bad by any means. Not Wisconsin level. And his GA is about 265 again, sort of in that similar range.
And by comparison, Strauss Mann is now 0.935 on the year, which is 4th in the country.
Right.
And his goals against are 2.00, which is 7th in the country. And there's really only one goaltender. I think there's somebody who is 1.66. Is that at Minnesota State?
When you start getting to those numbers, I'm just kind of wondering if you're playing against 5 skaters or if you're playing against just 3 guys that are skating against you, because you just that just very rarely happens, or your system is set up so that, you know, no one ever leaves your half of the ice.
I concede. I haven't seen, I think it's Minnesota State play this year, so I'm not sure what that guy is doing or how he's doing it, but I think he's...
Well, some of those schools, like Minnesota State, Clarkson's always up there. Mm-hmm. They get guys, schools like that generally play very defensive-minded, and they get a goal and they sit around. Mm-hmm. And you don't, they're generally not paired with good offenses, but they use what they have effectively. And you know, they're probably not going to be a bunch of high Corsi teams because they're not going to be venturing forward as much, but they do protect their net well. So just looking at these stats, I would say that I think you give the edge to Michigan in a number of different ways. Obviously, if they get out of position and they give up odd man rushes, they can get in trouble. But when they play good defense in front of man, they have a way to score goals on the power play now, and that is a weakness for Notre Dame. And Notre Dame doesn't really dominate the puck 5-on-5. So you kind of ask yourself, how is Notre Dame going to score? Well, if you watched the previous 2 games against Notre Dame, you would come away with the same question, as they only got 1 goal against Michigan all weekend and probably shouldn't have gotten a whole lot more. Man made a number of good saves, but it wasn't like they were pouring in good opportunity after good opportunity after good opportunity. They just didn't generate a whole lot. Yeah. And the 1 goal they got, I don't know if you remember, I think it was the beginning of the Saturday game, it was a deflection that turned into a changeup that like hopped up and over man, and he had, I mean, there's no way, and there's nothing you can do about that. That's
We seem to get a few of those in the in the first half of the season. And, you know, there's randomness in all games,
sure,
which is hard for fans, and I include myself in that, too.
Because you always want to know why.
Right,
yeah.
To sort of comprehend. But I think there's even more randomness in hockey. I mean, then perhaps, and then maybe like baseball, maybe baseball and hockey. And
well, you got legs, you got skates, you got sticks. Right. I mean, these aren't things that exist in, say, soccer or even basketball.
Right.
Legs do, usually. Sticks, maybe not sticks as much. Not,
yeah. Although it would be an interesting game.
That would be, if you could, yes. It would be almost like lacrosse.
Yeah.
So, based on these kind of matchups, I think I like Michigan in this series. They're playing well. Notre Dame is playing fine. They've kind of dropped off from where they were. They're still in the mix of everything in the Big Ten. They're not out of it by any means, but they're not playing their best hockey, and that has tailed off, and it's been going for probably 6 to 7 weeks now. So Michigan's hopefully probably catching them at the right time, especially as they're starting to gain some speed. So why don't we look at the Big Ten standings? But first, you had an interesting point that you had about the goal differential that Michigan has.
Yeah, Michigan has scored 87 goals this year, and they've given up 64.
That's in total, not the Big Ten.
Right. And if you – Bill James did something in baseball where he was trying to tease out randomness and luck. In other words, could you tell whether – a team had been lucky or unlucky over the course of a year. And when you have as many trials as you do in baseball, you can make some pretty good guesses. And I don't want to get too much into his plexiglass theories and other things like this, but I ran his Pythagorean theorem in hockey goals.
Okay.
And it predicted on scoring 87 and giving up 64, Michigan should win about 65% of its games. Which means, as opposed to being, 15, 12, and 3,
yep.
You would predict, assuming average luck, assuming normal randomness, Michigan would be 19, 10, and 1. And so if Michigan is 19, 10, and 1 versus 15, 12, and 3, well, we're not even having any of these conversations at all.
We're just preparing for the tournament at this point.
And it's the same thing in the Big Ten. We've scored 60 and given up 44, which is quite astounding.
They've given up the fewest amount of goals in the Big Ten, not just by a per-game basis, which they do hold, I believe, but also overall.
Yeah.
It's only by two over Michigan State.
I think Minnesota's plus 6, PSU is plus 8, and we're plus 16. And so if you run a Pythagorean theorem on that, it's about the same.
It's reflective of their season overall.
Overall. Okay. In other words, we still should be something like... 13-7 in the Big Ten, which again means we win. So with random luck. So really, if you buy into James's theories of randomness, and I do, I think what's happened was, especially in the first half of the season, they just had a lot of stuff biting them. And maybe it's beginning to – it's certainly in the second Michigan State game, you could argue it began to come around.
Well, you're seeing a little bit more of the puck luck, I think.
Right.
You're seeing the puck go – not only just go in, but, you know, people are hitting shots that they weren't hitting in the first – you know, I mean, we saw that with Michigan basketball where you had a couple of Michigan shooters that couldn't hit a shot to save their lives. But in the last few games, they've knocked down a few more.
Yeah.
And that happens in sports like you talked about. So – well, we're looking at the standings, and Penn State has 36 points. Minnesota has 36 points, so they're both tied at first, and Michigan has 33. And the difference is that Penn State only has two games left this weekend. Interestingly enough, they're both against Minnesota. And so with Michigan being 3 points behind them, hosting Notre Dame, who has 29, is in sixth place with the Michigan State and Ohio State in between them. Are we for Penn State or Minnesota? That becomes the question. I think we've talked about this pretty much since the game was out of hand on Friday night, and because Penn State has played two more games, their points per game average is lower than Minnesota's. We probably would like them to beat Minnesota this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, if they beat Minnesota twice, they'll have 42 points, but they're done.
Right.
They have no.
They max at 42.
That's their max.
Right.
And I don't think what either one of us really knows, maybe I should have looked it up, is what the Big Ten does with ties.
So it used to be regulation wins.
Okay.
Wins in regulation. But I think that if Michigan ends up tied in points with Penn State, they're also going to have the same amount of regulation wins. The difference might be number of ties versus wins in overtime. That might be the where the points match up. Mm-hmm. I don't know where that leads to. I do know that Michigan has won 8 of the 12 points from Penn State this year.
Yeah, we win the head-to-head against Penn State. There's no question about if that's in the mix, but I'm not really sure.
I'm not.
And these things seem to change year by year too.
Yeah.
They seem to every year change the rules on what happens with ties.
So we think that if we were rooting for Penn State over Minnesota because their overall total is hypothetically lower.
Yeah.
And then Michigan goes to Minnesota. So you probably, in just, you know, generic sense, favor Michigan over Notre Dame this weekend more than you'd favor them over at Minnesota next weekend. So if you can make the team that they have to play on the road with fewer points, that also would be to their benefit in that regard. So I think rooting for Penn State makes sense. This is obviously all predicated on Michigan beating Notre Dame, which is always assumed. You're always assuming and hoping that your team wins. But then they wouldn't have to win as many games next weekend on the road versus this weekend.
Well, I mean, one thing's for sure, 100%, and that is if Michigan wins all four of their games, they win the Big Ten.
And that's the big point.
And that's pretty remarkable given where we were at in December.
Well, given where we were at after that Ohio State game, referencing the previous segment, mm-hmm. when we said, oh, now they lost, now they're going to have to win 8 in a row. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? They won 4 in a row, and they have a series coming up against a team they handled decently well. That's a solid team, but they handled decently well at the beginning of this run, and then they have one series at Minnesota. So it's not off the table by any means. They're playing well enough to do it, but it seems a lot more likely than it did, mm-hmm. say, a month ago.
Yeah, and if Penn State wins twice, mm-hmm. Then all we need to do is split with Minnesota to at least tie.
Assuming we sweep this weekend.
Right.
Yeah.
Assuming we sweep this weekend.
Right. No, and I think that's what the point of rooting for Penn State is.
But if Minnesota wins twice, I think we still, and we sweep this weekend, I think we still tie with, no, we have to beat Minnesota twice.
We'd have to beat them
twice.
Yeah, right. Twice, which is going to be, to me, I mean, obviously the Notre Dame series is big because it's the first one in front of you, and you always have to win that one first. But that at Minnesota series could very easily come down to who's going to win the Big Ten.
And
next
Michigan
weekend.
Really needs Penn State to win at least one of those games.
Yeah, I think at least one. So it's going to be a fun weekend. I think Michigan plays earlier than the Penn State-Minnesota game on both nights. So I know the game at Yost is at, I think, 6 on Friday and then 4 on Saturday. So after that game, you should be able to check out Penn State-Minnesota, assuming it's on TV
or
streamed online. It's on somewhere. I'm sure you'll be able to find it if you really want to. But it'll be an interesting watch, assuming Michigan wins each game.
Can you speak to the pairwise a bit? Because even if we don't win, let's say we win 3 or 4 games and finish second in the Big Ten, and let's say we win our series.
So I can't do anything regarding into the Big Ten tournament because they don't project like that because you have no idea who's going to finish where,
right.
Especially given these standings. Again, a lot like basketball, as Brian always says on our Sunday podcast. So Michigan stayed at 20th in the pairwise, which seemed, they didn't even move up and they beat a pretty decent Michigan State team. Well, if you look at the finer details, they closed the gap on 14th. Like it's now in the thousands of points. Mm-hmm. So they could easily slide any up 1, 2, 3 with a win or two, depending on what other teams in front of them. The teams in front of them, if you want to keep track of them, Providence, Quinnipiac, Minnesota, Mass Lowell, Western. That would get them to 15th. But any of those teams are so closely, finely next to each other that a win or a loss is probably going to determine where you go there. So it's not the worst place to be because they still have a number of games left. Neither team that they play is poor. Notre Dame is 22nd. Minnesota is actually 3 spots above them in 17th. That's also something that would help them if Penn State would beat them, is Michigan would probably shoot right by them, I'm guessing, on Friday night if they beat Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. So they're right there. I'm looking at pairwise, but honestly, like, the thing to me is, like, they can win this division. And if they win the Big Ten, it's hanging a banner, which is kind of why you play. But then also, you would potentially, if they win it, they get a bye. And they wouldn't have to play in that two-game opening round series. Brian said they might need those games. I mean, if they win the division, they're probably winning three or four of these ones left, and they're probably pushing up to about 14th, 15th anyway. They would then host the rest of the Big Ten tournament. So you'd have to come and win at Yost, which only Ohio State has done in the second half, and Michigan beat Penn State here earlier. They played really tight with Minnesota and Michigan State earlier in the year when they weren't even playing that well.
How is the Big Ten doing their tournament this year? I mean, does it go to Detroit?
No. It's all home sites. This is the third year in a row that they've done this. So the number one seed will get a bye, and then you'll have 2 vs. 7, 3 vs. 6, and 4 vs. 5.
Okay.
And then you'll take the top four teams you'll have the one bye and the three winners, and then you'll re-rank them based on where they finished in the standings, and one will play four and two will play three.
Okay.
And so if they finish second, then they'll at least host the first round of the best of three series, and then they'll host the semifinals. And obviously if they win it, everything will be at Yost.
Yeah.
So, you know, they haven't really had a chance to really win the Big Ten in a while. They've come close a couple years ago. They've ended up finishing third. Notre Dame kind of ran away with that a little bit. But this is a really good opportunity because there's no dominant team, and there's an argument that Michigan's playing as well as any team in the Big Ten is right now. I know Minnesota also has a counter argument to that, but that could easily be decided next weekend. We still have 1 weekend to get through first. But next weekend's going to be pretty big. Yeah, look at the pairwise, keep track of those teams. But right now, Michigan can do a whole lot of stuff in the Big Ten itself. And it looks like they're probably going to, unless they just go off a cliff, they're probably going to host at least a first-round series. And they've been pretty good at home. And getting those couple wins probably would put them in the tournament. If they finish second or third but won the quarterfinal series to get to the semifinals, they're probably at least, like, on the positive side of the bubble, if not probably in. So
yeah. Fans have been good this year. I mean, they've hung in at Yost even with when it looked pretty gloomy in early January. I felt like the Michigan hockey fans showed up and stayed enthusiastic. So it's been a satisfying 2020 at
well,
the very least.
What you like to see when you watch sports is you like to see people get better. Like, even if you're good, as the year goes on, you want to see them improve their weaknesses. And if you look at Michigan from the beginning part of the year, they've really grown in terms of knowing where to be on the ice, and they've grown and they've gotten better on the power play. They've gotten better on the penalty kill. They've even gotten better on the offensive end. Like, it seems like they figured out some line combinations that work pretty well now. I know they moved, Bailey Johnson talks about how they moved Hayhurst from center to wing, and that probably has sparked some of his resurgence. So, you know, when you see a team do that, like, that's something that you like to see, because you can always then kind of trust the staff a little more. And we've been a little, you know, iffy on Mel a couple times, and, you know, there's still some things that need to be worked out, obviously. But, you know, the progression that this team has made over the last 2 months or so has kind of, you know, opened up some eyes a little bit and gives you some hope that you're going to get more out of some of these guys that looked like, they might fade at the end of their Michigan careers, but they're giving it one last run and improving as players.
It's been a fun year for me as a fan, that's for sure. And it didn't feel like that in December.
Well, that's the number one thing. That's why we watch sports. We want to enjoy it, want to have fun. Thank you, Craig, for coming on.
Sure.
Maybe we'll have you on again. And
over Brian's dead body.
You never know, right?
No. Thank you for listening to the Michigan Hockey Cast. I'm Craig Ross with David Nasternak, and I'm going to give you a small insight. I've been offered the job as the mayor of Chernobyl. I've turned down $3 million, but will accept the job for $5.6 million. Beekman, I'm sure you're listening.